Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, Chris, you missed me yesterday, so welcome back. And that's my first thing. My second thing is, can we consider this a Football Friday since we found out the full schedule of all the teams yesterday?
Well, yeah, Dave, you have to consider this a Football Friday. Didn't we do the same thing after the NFL draft?
We did. Yeah. So it's a Football Friday today.
It's a Football Friday. It's great to be back. I appreciate you fellas holding it down yesterday, although I was a little bit disappointed in the conversation you guys had around Tom Brady, Derek Jeter, and Michael Jordan.
Really?
I don't know how Tom Brady doesn't get more props than that, especially since he's married to a supermodel who makes more money than him. That has to factor into the equation.
I only put him behind Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I understand that, but I just felt like he deserved stronger consideration.
So you would have him number one on the depth chart?
I mean, if Michael Jordan's 1A, Tom Brady's 1B, I mean, you could flip a coin, and on any given day, you might wake up and have a different feeling.
Rick, how do you feel about this? It's very
well, you can flip a coin.
Listen,
I mean, you can flip a coin. You can throw, you know, flip a quarter like Jordan liked to do. Listen, I love Tom Brady, and it is. I mean, whatever, you know, you decide you want to do, but I'm all set as far as with the TB12 and eating avocado ice cream and everything else. I'd like to enjoy myself, too, a little bit. Maybe the occasional cigar, a little golf, a little gambling.
I don't think it was the occasional cigar with the Chicago Bulls, by the way.
No, I don't think it was either. Like you can't go wrong. I mean, period, you can't go wrong. And I'm sitting here reading an article this morning about, you know, the spike in Jordan sneaker sales, too. I mean, he's got one of the greatest athletic brands ever, Michael Jordan. Ever.
Yep. You know what's interesting, too? Jordan, an owner. Derek Jeter, an owner. We'll see if Tom Brady winds up with ownership when it's all said and done.
Yeah, does he want that headache? I mean, really. Do you want that headache?
I think it's a lot easier to own a basketball team than it is a football team, though.
Yeah.
A lot more money to buy a football team.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't Aaron Rodgers have a piece of the Milwaukee Bucks?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think it's a lot easier to get your foot in the door with the NBA than it is the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, the multi-billion dollar franchises.
Yeah.
And it's a cash cow.
Although, if there was a cornerback that played and has the ability to be able to do it, wouldn't you think it'd be the Mannings before Tom Brady?
I would think it would be the Mannings. Yes, that would be my number one.
Yeah,
because we've heard rumblings about Peyton wanting to get involved in ownership at some point.
Yeah, Peyton and Eli getting together and trying to buy a team. I mean, Eli didn't do anything to put water on the fire with that statement he made this week, talking about how he's going to be back in football in some capacity. He just doesn't want to coach. I mean, I could certainly see Eli and Peyton and Archie trying to get together and form a group to buy a team.
Absolutely. And if you wanted to own a team, how great of an avenue would it be to go in with the Mannings? Think about that. You're the financial backer and you're going with the first family of football to own a team?
I mean, it's the same thing what happened with the group that bought the Marlins, right? We're going to bring Derek Jeter into the group, and even though he's not putting up a lot of money, it's Derek freaking Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
It's instant credibility. So, I mean, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I don't think we've seen the last of the Mannings in the NFL.
No.
That's
no.
For sure.
Eli did say he's not going to be around the NFL this one year, but I wouldn't be surprised if any or all of them are back in the not-so-distant future. All right, guys, so we found out last night during a long, wonderful schedule release show on ESPN. Rick, you got your Jets schedule. I mean, first glance, 2020 Jets schedule. How you feeling off this thing?
Well, first glance, and this is optimistic, Rick. Remember that. No more negativity.
Chris, you weren't here for this yesterday. Now, Santi, I don't know if you have the soundbite, but I will fill you in. Chris, did you hear what Rick said yesterday about Adam Gase?
I did not.
No more negativity.
No more negativity around Gase.
No more negativity. He's all in. He will not say anything disparaging, anything negative, anything that is not a positive until things go, what was it, Rick? Completely.
I'm done as far as, you know, being negative about Adam Gase. I'm done with it.
Oh, Rick, that's going
to
last the first 2 weeks.
I have to be. It's not my best interest.
The first 2 weeks of the season, that's going to last.
Yeah, but I'm looking out for Sam Darnold, Chris. This isn't about me. I'm not going to be, I can't be selfish about this decision. It's got to be with my young quarterback. It's not about me. It isn't. I mean, that's the worst case scenario. If God forbid this thing goes sideways and you end up with Greg Williams as your interim head coach and, you know, Sam Darnold's going to have to learn another system headed into year four. I mean, you've completely wasted the benefit of having a starting quarterback on a rookie contract.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's a strong chance that this thing goes sideways early when you look at the first 2 weeks at Buffalo and then home against San Francisco. Yeah, I don't feel great about that if I'm a Jets fan.
So you think we
already know how hard it is if you start the season 0-2 to be able to make a push to get into the playoffs.
You think we walk into the station September 21st and his, I'm not going to be saying anything negative about Adam Gase.
Yeah, that's going to be done. That's going to be done. Yeah. Short-lived, Dave. Well, I don't know how short it is. I guess you got a couple of months, right, before that point?
Right.
We got
but
a few months.
I don't want to hear, a slow day in August and you beating up Gase. Like, that is now done. Until you look at the season and say, our season is completely spiraled out of control, positivity for one Adam Gase.
That's it. All I got is positive. I'm looking at the schedule. We got our Thursday night game at home, which is a positive, and we got our Monday night game at home. So there's some positives right there. How do you like that?
I love it. I like positive, Rick.
I'm not going to focus on the fact that three of our last four games are on the road, which I don't love. But
can't do that.
I'm only positive. This is positive, Rick, even though I woke up this morning and I look like Hellboy because I have a zit the size of a horn growing out of my forehead.
Yeah, but who cares? I mean, this is a time.
I don't care. It's Football Friday, baby.
Right?
Yeah, Friday.
It's Cinco de Ocho. It's a weekend high of 35 degrees out there. Can't leave our houses. I mean, it doesn't get better than this.
It's Cinco de Ocho?
Cinco de Ocho.
Don't you have to flip that? Isn't it Ocho de Cinco?
Either or.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, either or.
You can flip-flop them?
Okay. Yeah, you go whichever
That's
direction you'd like.
Okay.
Yeah, Cinco de Ocho.
Okay.
Yeah.
May the eighth be with you.
Yeah, this is the Chad Ocho Cinco of days.
Oh, okay, that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cinco de Ocho. Yeah, it's fine. Would you like to run through your Jets schedule?
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, it's up to you. Let's run right through it.
I love this. This is one of my favorite things to do. On September the 13th of 2020, at 1 o'clock in Orchard Park, your New York Jets take the field against, I think it's fair to say, the divisional favorite Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, by Vegas standards, they are. I mean, I think that it's them and the Patriots have, I think they're the exact same odds to win the
division. It's very
close. Actually.
Yeah, I think it's Bills by a scooch, then the Patriots, then the Jets by a scooch over the Dolphins right now.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the only thing, and this is not negativity, this is just being realistic. We heard this from Rich Cimini yesterday. I mean, biggest concern for the New York Jets headed into the season with, virtual OTAs, who knows what training camp looks like. You're going to have four new starting offensive linemen, mm-hmm. and it takes time for them to gel. And you're going up against the Buffalo Bills and the 49ers in week one and two.
Yep.
Not necessarily great matchups for an offensive line that hasn't gelled yet.
It's true. I mean, the Jets are going to be underdogs in those first two games. But, yeah.
Front you're going up against in the first month of the season. I mean, the Colts added DeForest Buckner, mm-hmm. and then the Denver Broncos are going to add back a healthy Brad Chubb to go along with Von Miller. Offensive line's oil is going to get checked real early in the season.
See what he's doing here, Dave? I'm not being negative, Rick. He's trying to push me towards negativity.
No, I don't see that. I don't see that at all. Let me defend you for a minute here, Chris. I look at him as an impartial observer, saying, you're going to get a real good test early on of your offensive line. Maybe you pass the test. He's not saying it's not going to be a doable situation. He's just saying it's going to be a test. Imagine you come out of the first 4 weeks and you're like, boy, our offensive line is pretty good after these four games. I mean, you should walk home the rest of the season after that.
Yeah, but under the current story.
I don't know about that, Dave. Did you see who they played week six?
I meant as far as the offensive line is concerned. Yeah.
Yeah, but did you? Okay, so Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa? Mm.
Yeah.
Listen, oh, okay. All right.
It's not an easy schedule.
They added Linville Joseph, too, former New York Giant.
Yeah, of course. It's not an
easy
schedule.
And a healthy Derwin James. No, it's not. This is not easy. It isn't. No. Listen, I don't know what you were going to tell me. Under the current circumstances, though, with what we're dealing with the pandemic and everything else, and not having, a normal offseason, I would rather not have my offensive lines oil checked this early in the season.
But this is what it is. I mean,
Let's get some mileage. Let's get some mileage on this thing before we start checking oil.
Well,
right?
You know what? You're just hopeful you get football on September 13th. You would take a fierce Buffalo pass rush on September 13th to be able to watch that game between the Jets and the Bills up at Orchard Park.
Yeah, I mean, pass rush and then the secondary. I mean, you're going up against a really good secondary, too. So, yeah, listen, they're going to have their hands full. All these teams, I mean, the Patriots have a tough schedule. I mean, these are all good teams. Most of these teams improved during the offseason. So, yeah, I mean, this is – the Jets will have their hands full. And if, you know, they can come together early, I mean, fingers crossed that they get off to a good start. But, I mean, if you just look at this, you know, first glance on paper with what you're dealing with, under the circumstances, at the Bills, home versus the Niners, and then going to Indy, who should be improved too. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have your hands full in the first month of the season. It's going to be difficult.
Yeah. Listen, there's not an easy game here. At the Bills is not easy. Home to the Niners, not easy. At the Colts, I mean, that's not an easy game by any stretch. Home to the Broncos, not easy. I'm not saying that you can't win it, but these are not easy games. You know what? My boys were asking me about the Giants schedule last night. Like, how come the Giants don't have that many easy games? I said, because they're not that good.
No one does.
When your team is not that good, you don't get easy games because you're the team that other teams look at and say, oh, well, we got the Giants. Yeah, that's a somewhat easy game. So these easy games for the bad teams don't really exist.
No, the Giants don't have any layups. When you're over under win total by Vegas is set at 5.5, it's shaping up to be a tough season. But the one thing I will say about the Giants, they have an opportunity to get out to a solid start. I mean, you look at the first four games, they could be a 2-2 ball club when the schedule gets to October.
Which would be great. Oh, it'd be great.
It'd be great. So, I mean, we're sitting there talking about what the outlook for both of these teams are based on the moves they made in the offseason, based on the schedule. We recognize that it's going to be tough because they're NFL teams, but you also see, you know, how things, you know, can lean towards your team's favor just based on the matchups that you have and based on what you think your team will grow into in 2020. So, I mean, both of these teams are at the infancy stage of program building with their new coaches. It's just ultimately going to come down to, you know, what opportunities they have early on in the season and can those coaches put the team in position to take advantage of them.
Yeah, but what you just said is something we talked about yesterday that would scare the hell out of me. It does as a Jets fan, is, you know, the infancy stages. I mean, clearly these teams are rebuilding to a certain degree, but mm-hmm. with the Giants, you have the GM on the hot seat. And with the Jets, as far as everyone I talk to that are Jets fans, you got a head coach that's on the hot seat. So, I mean, those don't necessarily line up, in my opinion. Like, where all of a sudden now you got two teams that are kind of rebuilding, and there's a sense of urgency for the coach with the Jets to win, and there's a sense of urgency for the GM of the Giants to win.
And I don't feel like the Jets are at the infancy stages. I mean, we've talked about it. Chris, I think you've said it. The Jets need to be either a playoff team or a team hovering right around the postseason. So it may look, and we may have discussions, that the team feels like they're infancy stages, but I think there's kind of conflicting feelings when you think about what this team needs to kind of do under Sam Darnold and Adam Gase this year.
Well, I completely agree. I think there is a lot of pressure on Adam Gase just because he wasn't the popular hire based on the pool of candidates that were available a year ago. Like, Chris Johnson decided that he was going to go with Adam Gase over a coach that had expressed interest in the job that had already won a Super Bowl in Mike McCarthy. So, I mean, I guess that's one of those things that won't make sense. And as a result, the Jets fan base is looking at Adam Gase with a little more scrutiny. And I think that's fair. Based on, you know, the logic, the rationale that went into the decision-making process. So, for me, I'm just looking at this and I say, yeah, the Jets have to show incremental improvement. Well, what does that look like if you were 7-9 last year? That means you should be 8-8 or better this coming season. And 8-8 just so happened to be good enough to be 7th in either conference last year. And those teams didn't make the playoffs. But this year, you're going to have seven teams in the playoffs. So you would expect that if you're hovering around 8-8, 9-7, you have a pretty good shot at getting in. So that's why I think a lot of people are jumping to the logical conclusion that the Jets should be a playoff team. And if they're not, you're probably talking about finding another head coach.
Yeah, but see, here's where I disagree. I mean, you may be right. And, you know, when you look at the schedule, you look what the Jets were last season, you know, defense was good, offense was awful. Because the offense was so putrid last season, I mean, you could be in a situation where because the schedule is this difficult, you could be, you know, 7-9 again, not make the playoffs.
But
there was such
team.
There was such a vast improvement with what you saw offensively that, you know, Adam Gase does survive another year.
Yeah, but that 7-9 was kind of a Fugazi 7-9.
Like, yeah,
the season was over by mid October. So if you give me, you know, 5-5 and 7-7, and then you finish at 7-9, but you've competed for that playoff spot. Maybe that's, and you see growth from Sam Darnold, maybe that's enough to bring Adam Gase back. If you start out 1-6 again and then finish up at, you know, 6-10 or 7-9, yeah, then I would agree that you probably
he'll be done
for a new head coach. Yeah.
No, but yeah, you'll be, I mean, he'll be done midway through the season. That's, I mean, for most Jets fans, that should be the biggest fear. Is you already have a coach that's not well liked in the locker room by players or coaches. You get off to a slow start. I mean, that's the recipe to have the team quit on the head coach. Early. Like, quit early on the head coach.
Yeah, but look at the schedule. I mean, you don't think a slow start is realistic? You're at the Bills. You're home to the Niners, who might be the best team in football or the best team in the NFC. You're at the Colts, who could be a good team. You're home to the Broncos. Home to the Cardinals should be a win. At the Chargers, I mean, you can't see 2-4 in those first six games?
Yeah, you could. I mean, you could see 0-3. Yeah, you can. I mean, I'm sitting here trying to be optimistic, and you just keep
I'm trying to be realistic. I'm not trying to be pessimistic and just say Gase stinks and this is awful. I'm looking at it realistically. The first game against the Bills, it's if the Jets are not 0-2, I think that's a win for them. Like, if you're 1-1, I think you've had a great start to the season this year.
Agreed. Because I mean, you figure you're going to split with the Bills. Hopefully, you split with the Bills. So, I mean, you would take, you know, beating the Bills at home as opposed to up in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can find a way to win, you know, win that game you should have won last season. You should have beat the Bills, but you end up blowing that one. And then, you know, see what happens at home week two. You got the, you know, the Niners coming west to east. But they're still the Niners, man. You're still talking about one of the best defenses, one of the best front sevens in the National Football League.
Yep.
And an improved offense. I mean, what they did this offseason was unbelievable. That's a well-run team. That scares the hell out of me. You're right. It scares the hell out of me. Listen. We're in a situation now with this fan base, and we took phone calls last year about Sam Darnold. Everyone's waiting for Sam Darnold to take that huge step because we've seen it with, you know, well-run organizations that put talent around their young quarterbacks. Usually it's year two that they have this big jump, right? You're hoping now in year three, because at some point after this season, you know, the Jets are going to have to make a decision on Sam's fifth-year option. Like, you're getting, I mean, you're just burning year after year after year. That because there are some questions about your head coach and how he's viewed in that locker room, that scares the hell out of me because I've been a part of those teams where, you know, guys don't necessarily buy into the head coach. They don't necessarily have a relationship with the head coach. They don't really like him. You get off to a slow start, and the whole thing just in front of your face just completely disintegrates, and guys just start quitting on the head coach, and that message completely goes stale, and you're all set with him.
Yeah, that's the worst case scenario for this team, but it's something that's absolutely on the board in terms of what could happen in the 2020 season, which is why I think a lot of Jets fans have some anxiety about what's happening around their team. But the thing about the schedule for the Jets, and we talked about this last year early on, the first seven games being able to shape what their season was going to be, that absolutely happened. I mean, you could say the same exact thing about this season. You know, the first six games of the year shaping what will be the Jets season in 2020. And based on the opponents that you had and the matchups that you have, it's just one of those things that's going to be tough. Now, the one thing I will say is this. The Jets have a damn good defense. And their run defense is top five in football. That's only going to get better when you add C.J. Mosley and Avery Williamson back. So I feel better about your chances in those games going up against those run-heavy offenses because you have that front seven that's pretty stout. So I guess that's what you have to lean on. The identity of your team is going to be the defensive side of the ball. And based on the matchups that you have, you feel good about what they're going to be able to bring to the table in terms of giving you a chance to compete in those games.
Yeah, but let's not pretend like we've seen this movie before. And we didn't, I mean, at the time, we didn't even realize it happened that early on in the season. But go back a couple of years. Remember that devastating loss where, what was it, Fitzpatrick threw, what, six interceptions against Kansas City?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then you find out after the season that's when it, I mean, for the players inside of that locker room, that's when it ended. The season was over after that game. 3 weeks into the season was done. They were all set.
Awful performance, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that scares the hell out of you, especially when, I mean, one of the, you know, underlying issues going on right now inside of that locker room is the disconnect between the defensive side of the ball and your head coach. The head coach doesn't even address the defensive side of the ball. That's, I mean, you have two head coaches. Greg Williams is the head coach of the defense, and Adam Gase is the head coach of the offense. So if you get into another situation where you got, you know, one of the better defenses in football, especially with C.J. Mosley back, and they're pulling their weight in the first month of the season, playing great football, and because you have a new offensive line, you know, your offense struggles. You got, I mean, you're counting on a rookie wide receiver to be one of, you know, Sam Darnold's main targets. You get off to a slow start offensively. Chris, you've been a part of locker rooms. How's that locker room dynamic now?
It's not good.
Games because your offense stinks. You have two separate teams. I mean, that's what'll happen.
Well, that's what you had last year, was two separate teams.
Yeah, which doesn't bode well for a coach that doesn't really have any relationship with the defense. It's like you got two separate teams in one locker room.
800-919-3776. People lined up. I mean, just the release of the NFL schedule has people all lined up. Let's start out with our dear friend, Ira in Staten Island. Good morning, Ira.
Hey, Dave, what's happening? Chris, I'm glad you're feeling better. And good morning, Rick. Rick, so you don't think 12-4 is doable on this? you look at the schedule. Listen, we all do this every year. It's on paper. You don't know who's hurt, who's not hurt. You see how it plays out. But, you know, taking my Jet fandom out of this, just talking as a football fan on paper, I break it into quarters. They get off to a 1-3 start, okay? It's not terrible, okay? Then you got 2-2, I got the next quarter. I think that's doable. I could even see them getting to 6-6 after the first 12 games. It's the last four games at Seattle, at Rams, at Pats. I could see them going 1-3 in that last quarter, maybe beating the Browns at home. And I think at best, 6-7 wins. And I don't want to get into the coaching situation. You know, we have plenty of time after Halloween to talk about that. Right now, you know, they could go 6-6. They might be a better team. Donald may actually look better. The offense might look better. But because of the teams they're playing against and the way the schedule breaks out, they can possibly just go 6-7, maybe 8 wins at best. I just can't see how they could go 9-7 or better. I just don't see it.
Yeah, but again, if that's the case, Ira, and they don't make the playoffs, they go 8-8, they're a 500 team. But, you know, Sam Darnold's taking that step. The offense looks, I mean, you're talking about
a positive season.
No, it'd be a positive season. I mean, you had the worst offense in the National Football League last year. So, yeah, it would be a positive season.
Absolutely. And you know, the biggest thing, and you hit on it, you know, you had Simeone on with the offensive line. That's going to be really, you know, it's going to be for all teams with new coaches and had big roster overhauls or young quarterbacks. Like, does anybody think that Burrow is going to start week one, or he's going to start week one Cincinnati? How great, or how is he going to get out of the box with all this time that he's going to end up missing, say the season starts late? I mean, we don't know what type of training camp they're going to have. But I just think for rookies this year, considering what we're dealing with right now, I think the expectations for young players, you have to be fair about it, because I think it's going to be hard to judge rookies. But with the schedule, I have them down for about 7 wins. I think that would be a good season for them.
All right, Ira, we appreciate the phone call. If you win 7 games, Darnold plays well, and you don't get out to a 1-6 start, I don't think that's the end of the world for the Jets. I really don't. I think you have to be somewhat realistic when you look at this team. They're not a great football team by any stretch.
No, they're not a great football team, but I think you have to see improvement. And I know everybody's saying, well, if the offense rates better, if Sam Darnold looks like he's clearly taking that next step. But if you couple Sam and that offense improving with the defensive unit that you have in place from last year, only getting better from a talent standpoint, I don't see how you have the same exact record as you had last year.
Well, the schedule's tough.
I know the schedule's tough, Dave. I still don't see how you have the same exact record. I don't.
Well, because the offense still isn't great. I mean, you're talking about an improvement from being the worst. So all of a sudden now you're in the middle of the pack. I mean, into Ira's point, too, about not having, you know, these crazy expectations for rookies, I mean, that's another thing that's probably not working in the favor for Sam Darnold in this offense is that, I mean, one of the wide receivers that you're going to rely on is going to be a rookie. I mean, Denzel Mims is going to have a lot of catching up to do to be...
Mims is a rookie, and Perryman's brand new.
Yeah, and then whoever you end up picking up, if it's Dante Pettis or someone else, like, you still need one more wide receiver.
I get that it's going to be a tough transition for the rookies just because you have no OTAs, no mini camp, and we don't know what training camp is going to look like, but that's also something to be said because the veteran players don't have those same things either. So I don't know that the speed of the game, at least early on, is going to be the same as we're used to seeing, you know, in the month of September in another given year. You know what I'm saying? Just because nobody's had a real off season to speak of. So I think this is going to be everybody playing catch up. Now it's going to hit the rookies a lot worse just because they haven't been in the National Football League. But I think everybody's going to get off to a little bit of a slower start.
How do you feel about this little Dolphins run in November? You got the
Dolphins? Thought that was interesting. For the first time ever in the NFL, you have teams playing each other in back-to-back games.
You got the Dolphins, Rick, on 11-15. Then you get your bye, and then you come back from the bye with the Miami Dolphins. So, I mean, back-to-back games with a bye sandwich in there against the Dolphins.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm not listening. I mean, the Dolphins, you know, hopefully aren't great. So, no, I mean, that's an opportunity to... Okay, that's fine. So that's an opportunity. You're playing a team that you should be at least as good as. So you play, I mean, twice in 3 weeks. Maybe get 2 wins in those 3 weeks.
Yeah.
The Dolphins going into
the bye.
Could
make a ruin the Thanksgiving for you this year.
But it also makes the bye. I mean, you can actually sit back and relax more than you normally would going into a bye because you just played the team you're going to play coming out of the bye.
Yeah, if that ends up being a bye week at all. You know, because
the NFL
built in that little contingency where all week two opponents have the same bye week later on in the season. So if they can't start the season on time, then that gives you an opportunity to slot that week two game into that bye week.
Right. And the truth is we have no idea. We have no idea if they're going to start on time. We have no idea if there's going to be fans there. We have no idea, you know, if they're going to be able to play 16 games. We don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, roll the schedule back in the Super Bowl into late February. We don't have any idea.
And well, we know they can do that.
What? Now,
we know they can do that. You know that's the one thing you do know.
That they can push the Super Bowl in late February. But
yes.
I'm saying there's so much unknown as we sit here a couple months before the season's getting ready to start.
I will tell you this one thing that I do know. If, you know, I'm hearing all this talk of when the schedule came out and some of it was leaked, that Tom Brady, week one in New Orleans. Well, if that game does happen and there's no fans in the stands, that's exactly when you want to play New Orleans.
Oh, of course.
100%. 100%.
So that could be in Tom Brady's benefit.
Absolutely.
See, the NFL wants Tampa to be good. The NFL wants Tampa to be good.
Why would you not? You have one of the faces of the NFL at an unprecedented age, and you have a chance to watch them be really good with tons of weapons, and the Super Bowl's in their home stadium.
Not to mention they have 5 primetime games, right?
Yeah.
5 primetime games.
You see what
games.
The NFL did, by the way? Patriots, 5 primetime games. Tom Brady, 5 primetime games. We're not taking a side in this little battle between
these. Yeah, and two, in the other little thing, too, is that I think in the first 14 weeks of the season, Tampa and the Patriots never play at the same time.
Which is
so you get to
fun.
Watch both.
Yep.
Unlike the New York Jets and New York Giants, where, unfortunately for us...
1 o'clock games.
Yeah, 1 o'clock games, 5 times.
Do you see how many 1 o'clock games the Jaguars have?
Yeah, no one's interested in the Jaguars.
14. 1 o'clock game.
I'm going through the schedules this morning, and I'm like, oh, we're in good shape. We got the second game of the season, not at the same time. I'm like, okay, we're at 2, and then last 3 games of the season all at the same time. I was like,
boom, 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 huh?
5 games now. I hate that.
Just,
I hate that.
Hope,
I can't stand it.
You hope we have football on September 13th. That's all you want.
Well, I'm hoping for football, and I'm also hoping.
September 10th,
right,
Dave.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm also hoping that, you know, college football decides to push to the spring so we get Saturday windows too. So maybe
that would be amazing.
That's gonna be a lot though. Because
but wouldn't you rather have if you could find a way to have the Jets and Giants not play at the same time?
Of
you know,
course.
Move,
listen for me.
Move a couple of those games to the Saturday.
To have 3 or 4 football games on a Saturday. So you're gonna tell me I'm gonna get Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday? Yeah, for me, I'm just thinking about my poor wife.
Yeah, but think about the shows. I mean, you just get weeks of shows. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I mean, Dave, you do have a choice. You do have some control of the matter.
What does that mean? What
I mean, you can choose to spend time with your wife and not watching the football game.
No, see, I can't.
You can't. So you have no control.
I have no control.
Football owns you.
Then, like my seductress, I have absolutely no control. If you none,
that's like if this Earl Thomas story is a story about Dave. Like Sherry would find Dave in bed with the
football.
NFL.
Yeah.
With football.
She'd be like, how dare you?
Dave was naked with a Sunday ticket in bed.
That's right. She'd rip the sheets back and be like,
stuff like this happens, bro.
Football tells you what to do.
Yes.
50
yes.
Shades of Grey style, huh?
Stuff like this happens, bro.
You're telling me football 4:30 on a Saturday and you'll be like, all right, let's go out for a nice early dinner and then we'll take in a movie. I can't do that. I don't have that control over it.
Speaking of 4:30 games, how about the Christmas Day 4:30 game?
Oh,
and
that's
a
Saints,
good
right?
matchup.
What's
no,
that game?
No. No, it's not the Saints.
I think the Ravens.
It's not the Ravens.
It's not the Ravens?
No, isn't it Green Bay? I want to say it's Green Bay.
No,
I just had it. I had it written down.
Santiago doesn't know this. Santiago,
Saints, Minnesota, I think. Saints, Minnesota.
Saints, yes.
Saints, Minnesota. That's
Minnesota.
What it is. Yeah.
Oh.
That's what
Which
it
has become kind
I know
of a
it was a team with purple
now.
In it.
Christmas Day game. Stop.
Which is
NBA,
a Friday.
NFL. Oh.
So that week then, I guess the Thursday will be done or the Thursday continues that week?
In December?
Yeah. Christmas week.
I don't think you have Thursday football because I think you have Saturday football.
Right. But that weekend we'll have Friday, Saturday, Sunday ensconced around Christmas.
Oh. Love it. Love it.
How delicious
Love it, Dave.
Is that?
Love
That's
it.
Right. Football guys, we're 4 months, potentially 4 months away from the start of the NFL season. 800-919-3776. We'll get into the Giants in a second. We're getting very unfair tweets, I think. Manny P. Chris, you tell me. I want to hire you as the independent arbitrator. You ready?
All right.
Dave is such a Jets hater. It says his options. I imagine it means opinions. His opinions about the team shouldn't be given any relevance. What have I said today that's been remotely negative or unfair about the Jets?
Nothing, Dave. I've been the only one that's been negative about the Jets, and even that's a stretch. I don't think it's negative. I think I'm just being realistic.
And that's what I'm trying to do as well. And then Joe Montour blasts Rick. He says, sorry, can't listen to Rick anymore. Most negative Jets fan I've ever heard. Very unfair.
I'm trying to be positive.
I don't understand what
fault.
It is to be positive about the Jets team. I mean, when you talk about four consecutive losing seasons?
You're same so thing. Negative.
What is there to be positive about right now?
I think we're trying to be realistic, and you guys are taking it very personally. That would be my take on this. All right, 800-919-3776. Now, next Tuesday, May the 12th, we're celebrating Derek Jeter by showing a classic Derek Jeter game on ESPN TV as part of our MLB Encore Tuesdays. The games that are up in the air, and it's up to you to choose. Go to ESPN.com, Yankees page, and vote between the Jeffrey Mayer game in 96, Mr. November against the Diamondbacks in 01, the dive against the Red Sox in 04, number 3,000 against Tampa in 11, or Jeter's Bronx farewell against the Orioles in 2014. You decide, ESPN.com, Yankees page. We're bringing in the friend of the show, I think it's fair to say, ESPN insider, NFL insider, Dan Graziano. Good morning, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, guys. How are you?
It's fair to say friend of the show at this point, yes?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Why not?
We would like to go with that. So last we spoke to you.
I'm proud to be called that.
Yes, we appreciate that. Last we spoke to you, I think it was the day before the NFL draft, and you predicted for us that the Giants would take Wirfs out of Iowa. They went with Andrew Thomas, obviously, and a lot of people were wrong on that one. And then you start to hear in the days after that so many teams had Thomas as their top-ranked offensive lineman. Did that just kind of like go unexpected? Does it shock you that the Giants took Thomas? Is that something that so many teams liked? Yeah, go ahead.
I think when I made the prediction, I made it clear it was a guess. I think before the draft, you had those four top offensive tackles, and I felt like every time I talked to someone different, the list was in a different order, right? Like if some people had Tyson, some people had Becton, and some people, you know, had Tristan Wirfs. So I think it was not a surprise. I thought they were going to take an offensive tackle. I did not know who the number one guy was on their board. And obviously it was Thomas. And I mean, look, you know, he has experience playing at a high level and important games in college. And that appeals to them for sure. And I mean, you know, it is outside my personal purview to be able to evaluate an offensive lineman, you know, as a prospect. I'm not a scout, right? I don't have that kind of that training or skill. So hopefully for the Giants, they've done a better job evaluating this guy's long-term prospects than they did the last time they took an offensive lineman in the top 10.
Dan, I apologize. Dave going out of his way to try to embarrass you. I apologize for that.
That's all right. It's fine.
Let's get down to something.
He's a friend of the show. You can't embarrass a friend.
You try to
do whatever you want. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what I was agreeing to there when I gave it the approval. But anyway, go on. What do you got?
That's why I got the approval
Let's
first.
Talk about something. Let's talk about something topical. After seeing the release of the 2020 schedule, anything at all that you've seen so far up to this point that surprised you at all with this schedule?
You know, the focus for us has been so much on are they going to play, or are they going to have to delay the season? Are they going to have to shorten the season? Are they going to play with no fans, et cetera? So I'm kind of looking at it with those eyes. And, you know, you look early on, like they put some stuff in there that allows them some flexibility. Like if you look at week two, everybody has the same bye week as their week two opponent, right? So if all of a sudden you had to miss the first couple weeks of the season, week two could be easily rescheduled on the various bye weeks of those teams. There's no division games in week three and four, so if you had to shorten the season by a couple weeks, you could get rid of those weeks, and then nobody would lose a division game. You know, there are some things that stood out once you dug into it a little bit. But, no, I mean, otherwise, if you look at it through as if it were a normal year, I mean, you can spot, you know, who has the tough road stretches and who flies the most miles against Seattle this year. Seattle has five games in the Eastern time zone, which is like no big deal to them. They had six last year counting their playoff game, and they won them all. So I wonder if Seattle even requests some big travel because they're so proud of how well they play out here. But yeah, no, I think it's, I don't know, just the fact that they released it, the fact that they're still planning to play and play on time, I think those are the big parts of the story, and we'll see, obviously, over the next couple months what happens and whether they end up being right.
And Dad, that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, based on what you're hearing, how confident is the league office that the season is going to start on September 10th?
Yeah, I think the word is optimistic and not confident. And I think there's obviously a critical difference there. And there's no way to be confident because nobody knows how the thing's going to unfold in the next couple months. The NFL has the benefit of time. They'll have the benefit of being able to watch what the NBA does, what Major League Baseball does, and learn from those things. But I think ultimately the hope is, and based on the people I've been talking to, the hope is that by September, right, that contracting the virus means something different than it did in April. That there are advances in testing and advances in treatment that put the whole thing in a different context where we can go on with our lives to a certain some sort of normal extent, not completely back to the way it was, but on the road there, because there have been advances in medicines that can treat the virus and shorten the duration or reduce the severity, all that kind of stuff. So all the NFL's plans are based on consultation with medical experts who are talking to them about all this stuff and where it might go in the coming months. But, of course, they will tell you in the next breath, no one knows where it will go in the coming months. One person told me the other day, you know, we're crazy if we don't just reevaluate everything every 2 weeks. And I think that's sort of where they are.
Yeah, we have no idea where we're going to be come September. I think that's pretty obvious right now. Dan Graziano, a friend of the show, joins us on 98.7 ESPN. So Giants over with the Steelers, the first of the two Monday night games on September the 14th right now. That's what the schedule says. And we discussed it earlier on the show. Giants catch the Steelers at a good time, I would think, right, Dan? I mean, with Roethlisberger coming off major surgery, 38 years old, you'd want to get Pittsburgh early on in the season rather than, I think, later on in the season, right?
Yeah, especially if we don't know if there's going to be a training camp. We know the off-season program is going to be shortened and different and virtual and all that. Yeah, I think you have a quarterback like Roethlisberger. If you have a player coming off of, you know, effectively a missed season, you would expect some rust going on. Sure, that's something for Giants fans to hang their hopes on when you look ahead to the scheduled opener on Monday night against the Steelers. But, yeah, I think, you know, Pittsburgh has a very tough defense, one of the better defenses in the league last year, and the expectation is that they'll be a playoff contender again with Roethlisberger back. But I think you make a good point, which is that, you know, he might need a game or two to ease back into things after the injury. But boy, the Giants don't get a lot of breaks, right? And at Chicago and home to the Niners, at the Rams, at the Cowboys. I mean, they're going to have to be on their A game for the first month or so if they want to get off to a decent start.
Dan, I don't even know if you can answer this question. If anyone can, it would be you. So you mentioned all the contingencies and everything else, being able to move the Super Bowl back if you want to, you know, maybe cut some games or put them in the, you know, back half of the back end of the season. What if, from the people that you're talking to, you know, what's the appetite for the NFL to actually start the season with, you know, no fans in stands? If that were the case where they felt like, you know, if we wait a couple extra weeks and we can start the season with fans, would that be something that they would consider as opposed to playing games with no fans?
I think so. My understanding is that they've they're just they're going through all possibilities, right? Do we play with fans in the stands? Can we play with no fans in the stands? Can we open our stadiums at 30% capacity, 50% capacity? So they're going over all these possibilities. But if you were told, yes, if you were told by the CDC and whoever, the local governments, the federal government, if you were told, yes, in your season is supposed to start on September 10th, but if you wait till September 24th, you can fill your stadiums, and that was rock solid, and you knew it for a fact, I think that's absolutely conceivable that the league would slide the season back 2 weeks if it meant that. I mean, obviously, look, the bulk of the NFL's revenue is generated from the TV contracts, and my understanding is it's something like 75% of what they would be making in terms of revenue would still make it, even if they played games with no fans in the stands. So I think if that has to happen, they'll do it. But certainly they would rather have that remaining 25% available to them with, if possible. So everything they're doing, and, people get upset, and I understand it's a very sensitive issue, and it should be. Everything that the NFL is discussing is all set in the context of if we get the go-ahead to even try this stuff. And they're operating as if they will, and if they don't, then obviously they'll adjust when the time comes.
Dan, you must be reading my mind or something, because I was just about to ask you about the TV contracts with the NFL. I mean, the owners made the push earlier this year to negotiate the new CBA with the players so they could get to the business of negotiating the media rights deals with the TV companies. Do you have any insight as to how this pandemic is affecting those negotiations?
My understanding is that the negotiations have continued, or at least have not broken off. In certain cases, I think I would still expect the TV deals to get extended. And honestly, I think if I'm the NFL, and this is a possibility that was raised to me in a phone call just yesterday, if I'm the NFL and I'm doing a deal with, let's just say, Fox, just to pick someone random, I would say, look, let's front load this deal, right? Why don't we put more money in the first year or two and then help us make up for the lost revenue we're going to be dealing with in terms of no fans in the stands, maybe loss of preseason games, that kind of thing. And then maybe on the back end, you get a little bit of a deal for helping us out now. So those kinds of conversations, I think, are still taking place. And I still think I know we're one of them, so I obviously don't want to speak from a position of authority because I don't have insight into, ESPN, ABC, and their plans for spending on NFL rights. But I would think that there's a long view being taken that this will not always be our circumstances. And at some point, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that these networks are still going to want to be broadcasting NFL games. And as a result, I do think that they'll continue to push forward with those negotiations.
Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN NFL Insider. So a lot of people, and I don't know that it's right, but a lot of people have thought that maybe Cam Newton winds up in Jacksonville. Diana Rossini is just reporting that Mike Glennon is going to sign down in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. Where do you think Newton winds up? I mean, can you give us a couple of ideas of where you think? Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of options for him at this point.
There aren't a lot of options for him, and it's a complicated scenario. Like, I don't know if Jacksonville gets into its offseason and decides it needs Cam Newton, I'm not entirely sure that Mike Glennon's going to be the thing that stands in the way of that, right? I think that's apples to oranges. The problem with Newton is, he just missed a whole season with a foot injury, and he had shoulder surgery the offseason before that, and so you don't know what you're signing at this point. You can't go give him a physical because, not allowed. And until your doctors can get a look at the foot, I mean, the foot's a big deal, because if Cam Newton can't run, then what kind of player is he, right? And is he a player you want? And is he a player that can help you? And he's certainly not the player that you would give the size contract to that you would a Cam Newton who can run. So there are a lot of questions teams can't get answered about Cam Newton right now. Combine that with the fact that, as you mentioned, there aren't a lot of quarterback jobs, certainly starting quarterback jobs, available right now. And you have a slow market that I think will continue to be slow until some sort of circumstance changes. Maybe somebody gets hurt. maybe somebody like a Jacksonville or a New England, you know, gets into the offseason and says, we're not as set at this position as we hoped we would be. Let's reevaluate this Cam Newton situation. So I think that's where things stand with Newton. And at this point, I think until teams can really get their doctors to look at him and check him out, he's going to have a hard time finding a place to land.
Dan Graziano joins us here in the show. Dan, what is the sense from the people that you talk to about the amount of pressure on Adam Gase this upcoming season? Is he, I mean, does he need to have a huge jump and have a winning season for him to keep his job?
I think what you want to see with the Jets is progress, right? You want to end the season feeling like things are, you know, moving forward, right? If it's another season like they've had, if they go backwards, if there's a lot of, you know, flailing around about changing the roster here and there, moving guys in and out, like you saw the last couple of years when Gase was in Miami, then I think, you know, you probably have trouble. And I don't know whether they would do it after 2 years or not, but I think if you see progress, if you see the Jets in a, you know, I think the AFC East teams kind of look and go, this might be the time to make some moves here because New England looks a little shaky. We'll see if they actually are. You know, I wouldn't bet against Belichick. But if the Jets show progress, if they contend, if they, you know, I know they were flirting with 500 last year, but if they stay in it and they, you know, contend for the playoffs and things look like they're moving forward, I think he'd probably be fine, especially if you really come out of this season thinking, wow, things look really great with Sam Darnold. Darnold, we know last year, had a weird year with mono and all that, so maybe you get a pass on, like, his development and where it would have been otherwise. But if you're coming out of this year and Sam Darnold was playing very, very well and you feel good about his future, then I think that keeps things status quo in terms of the coaching staff.
Dan, pass interference review is officially dead. The competition committee didn't even put it to a vote because it didn't get any support. They don't want to get into the business of continuing to challenge subjective calls by officials. But I guess that brings into question another point of view, which is making sure that the officials get these calls right in real time because you recognize what's at stake. Has there been any conversation about any changes to the officiating people in the league office or adding an official to the crews and on the games? Has there been any talk about a way to try to improve the officiating in the game moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, there has been. And this offseason has been strange because the meetings that usually take place, the owners' meetings, et cetera, you know, in March and in May, haven't been able to get together, obviously. But there has been, and Kevin Seifert for us has done a really good job of chronicling the discussions about changes to the officiating department. And I think Kevin wrote back in March that they were trying to lure back Dean Blandino, you know, who used to oversee officiating and then went to Fox. But there's a lot of discussion about making changes in that department in terms of moving some people around and maybe, you know, expanding certain responsibilities, just changing sort of the way it operates. And I think you will see some of that announced at some point this offseason, whether it means people get moved in and out of different jobs or whether it means the workflow is different in terms of review and all that kind of stuff. I do think the NFL will make that part of their offseason changes to that. Specifically what they'll be, I think, remains to be seen, but there's definitely conversation about changing aspects of the officiating department there on Park Avenue.
Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I have an NFC South question, which is usually left to Rick because he's our NFC South insider. But I'm gonna go here. Do you look at this as still New Orleans' division to win, or is this even footing with New Orleans and Tampa Bay right now?
Well, I think you still have to look at it as New Orleans' division to win because, I mean, we can look at Tampa Bay and like what they've done. And obviously, I mean, Tom Brady, very exciting, but we haven't seen them play together, right? We've seen New Orleans Saints win the division 3 years in a row. We know what they look like. And, yes, their playoff exits have been painful and sometimes inexplicable and sometimes unfair. But they have been consistently good, and it's basically the same group that's been consistently good enough to win the division. So I think you still have to look at it as their division to win. I mean, heck, the quarterback is like 2 or 3 years younger than Tampa Bay's, right? So he's like a spring chicken compared to Brady. So I think it's fascinating. I mean, I hopefully, you know, Tampa Bay makes it an exciting year. You'd hate for that to be a disappointment after all the hype. But, yeah, and certainly they could win it. I mean, there would be people that are going to pick them, and justifiably so. But for me personally, I still think it's New Orleans until somebody knocks them off.
All right, Dan, last one for me, and I'm asking for a friend. In your opinion, gut feeling, what ends up happening with Dak Prescott in this contract situation?
That, I believe Dak Prescott will sign a contract extension with the Cowboys and play there a very long time. They have until July 15th to get it done, or else he has to play on the franchise tag. Dak Prescott, you know, and his family are dealing with a terrible tragedy right now, the loss of his brother a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, the Cowboys are giving him, you know, they're not pushing him on the contract while they're dealing with that. So they have time. Both sides understand that there's time. Both sides are optimistic that it will work out. Both sides feel that they want each other, right? I mean, Dak knows the Cowboys want him. They've offered him a ton of money. And the Cowboys believe that Dak doesn't want to go anywhere. So I think it'll get done at some point before that July 15th deadline.
Dan, I know there are a lot of what-ifs out there right now, but the NFL has had some speculation around potentially holding games on Saturday if there's no college football played. Is that something that you could see? Are there provisions in the schedule that would allow it? How do you think that that's something that the NFL will actually do?
I think it's something to look into if there's availability. You see, in a normal year, they have Saturday games. I think usually 16 and 17 when the college season is over, you know,
correct,
before the playoffs start. So it has been something that they've taken advantage of in the past. I got to be honest, I'm not sure whether they put Saturday games in. I didn't look at that aspect of it when everything was happening last night. So I'm going to check it out now and see. But no, they. I think it's something that they would consider, certainly. But to do it now and kind of Bigfoot the college season before the college season even knows what's going on, it seemed kind of rude, wouldn't it? I mean, especially for a league that has kind of tried to be respectful of college football as an institution anyway. So I think if there's a vacancy and they could do it, I think it's something the league would definitely consider, but I don't think it's automatic that they would do that, especially
all right, Dan.
Especially while the college schedule is so up in the air.
Dan, good stuff as always. I want to ask you this real quickly before we let you go. Rick looks at this as one of the highlights of his career. Do you remember sitting and doing a three-hour show with Rick DiPietro on a Saturday?
I do. Was it a Saturday or was it a? I thought it was.
No, it was a weeknight.
It was a weeknight.
Yeah, it was a 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock start. Yeah.
I think I traveled that day. I think I was covering a game and came back in and then went into the city to do that show. I do remember it. Yeah, I don't remember what time. I guess it was NFL season, so we must have been talking that. I don't remember too many of the topics, but I do remember being in that studio with Rick for sure.
Nice. All right.
No, you don't remember. Dan, you don't remember because you just subconsciously just decided to throw it out of your mind. That was when you showed up, and we were supposed to talk NFL, but then remember like 90 seconds before the show was going to start, the New Jersey high school hazing story came out. So we had to lead the show with that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. I don't. I guess I was tired from the flight that morning, and therefore it's not in my memory banks. I'll stick with that story.
All right, Dan. Good stuff. We appreciate it. We're glad that you can join us as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Enjoyed it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good stuff. The great Dan Graziano on 98.7 ESPN. So
yeah, it wasn't Marconi worthy. I can tell you that.
You say that, but I would love to get the tapes of that one.
No, it wasn't good. It was not.
No, it was
I
bad.
Can't
or
it was
just
no. Nah, I can't imagine it was good. No, nah, it was fine. I mean, I can't imagine it was great.
But you're talented and you're good, and he's talented and he's terrific. So
yeah, but we're on. I mean, you're talking about a hazing story. I mean, there's not many places you can go with the hazing story.
Well, I'm sure it wasn't an uplifting start to
the
show.
No, it was not. I wanted to ask Dan too. We got to get him on again because this is going
right
to be
now?
I mean, this. No. It wasn't the right time to ask him because we were talking, you know, more, you know, schedule stuff and everything else. But at some point over the next couple of weeks, this is going to be more of a story just because it's actually an interesting idea with the Jim Harbaugh letter. I wonder how willing the NFL would be to consider something like that.
Well, get into it. Go ahead. Explain a little bit.
Well, no. So, Jim Harbaugh wants, he had the open letter. Suggested that college football players get to decide when they wanted to, you know, make themselves eligible to be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And then if, you know, they don't get drafted, like say they say, okay, I'm going to leave and I want to go into the draft. They don't get drafted. They still have their eligibility and can return to school.
Kind of like what you had with college basketball.
Yeah, and it's similar to like the NHL. You can get drafted and then decide not to sign and then go back to school if you'd like.
Right.
Yeah, like with college basketball too. Like as long as you don't hire an agent, if you decide that you don't like where you went or something like that, you can go back to school.
But does his proposal say you can go through the draft, like all the way through the draft, not get drafted, and then go back to school?
Yes.
Yeah, because college basketball is you can go up to a certain point, and then you have to pull out of the draft, right? You can't go through the actual draft.
Yes. Yes.
So little dissimilarity. But, yeah, interesting, certainly.
Yeah, but I don't know. See, I don't know what the NFL would say to that. Just because all of a sudden now, I mean, you got, you know, one of these guys that's just that good after his freshman year decides that he wants to go into the draft, gets drafted. I mean, we always say it. It's not, you know, it's not what you get paid. It's how many times you get paid. And now all of a sudden you get this kid after only 1 year of college. I mean, how many, you're going to pay that guy a lot of money if he has a long career.
Yeah, it doesn't really work out for teenagers when they get into the NFL, though.
No.
I mean, you had that one situation with Amobi Okoye when he was a teenager and got into the NFL. You had the same thing or a similar situation with the wide receiver from USC, Mike Williams. Neither one of those guys really panned out. I just feel like it's such a huge difference from a physical maturation standpoint that you're probably not talking about a lot of guys that can leave after 1 or 2 years of college and go to the NFL.
Like Trevor Lawrence should be able to leave. Like a guy like that. Like Trevor Lawrence should.
He's worthy of the NFL now, yes.
And running backs. I feel bad for the running backs. You know what I mean? Just because their shelf life in the NFL is not.
Right.
Again, guys, I just, it's one of those things. It's a whole different world when you talk about going from college football to the NFL from a physicality standpoint. Like, I just don't know that it's possible.
Well, I think you could have a running back after 2 years. I mean, if he plays his true freshman year and he plays as a sophomore, that decides after his second year he wants to get drafted. I think it would be position by position. I think a running back could do it.
So the guy that probably gets hit the most out of any of the ball carriers, you think that would be a position that he could do it and be successful at it?
Yeah, after 2 years as opposed to 3 years? When you're going to make the argument that the running back is you want to keep as much tread in your tires as possible. I'd rather use that tread in the NFL than in college.
No, I
mean, look at how many times Jonathan Taylor carried the ball at Wisconsin. They beat the hell out of him.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Rick. I get what you're saying. I just don't think that. I think the NFL is different than other sports in terms of how brutally physical it is. It's a collision sport, and your body has to physically mature in order to be able to withstand that. And that's the thing that you just don't know when you start talking about a kid being 1 or 2 years removed from high school as opposed to 3 or 4 years removed. So I just, like I said, it'd be interesting to see if it ever happens, but I guess I'm skeptical of it just because I know the physicality of the game at that level.
And listen, you're not wrong. I mean, for the most part, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, but you're a good guy that's thinking about, I mean, you, when you say you're concerned about the safety of the players, you mean it. We all know the answer.
Yeah, I mean it because it is a real chance every time you walk on that field, you might not ever walk off it. That's the thing that I worry about.
No, I know you do. I don't think the NFL does.
I don't think they do at all.
Yeah, so I think it's just, I mean, it's given, you know, the kids the opportunity if they can do it. Now, a lot of them get bad advice and everything else. That's why you get to go back to school if you choose, but
That's not a good look for the NFL either, though. You guys say the NFL is not worried about it at all. I mean, you're talking about concussions a decade ago, almost crippling the sport. Look at youth participation in football. It steadily declined every single year. So, yeah, the NFL is absolutely worried about the optics if you have young kids coming into the league before they're physically ready and they get seriously injured. That affects the bottom line eventually.
Yeah, but it all goes back to the bottom line.
I understand that, Dave, but again, if you have these incidences because these kids aren't physically ready to play and they get seriously hurt, if they get paralyzed or if they suffer a lot of concussions, yeah, that becomes a PR problem, which starts to affect your money.
Yeah, but I guess Jim Harbaugh's point is this. Like, so just say, I mean, there's no number of concussions that you know would, I mean, who knows? Like, I've had however many, you've had however many. Like, there's no clear cut. If you have this many concussions, you could get CT. Like, you don't even know. But let's just say for for the sake of this conversation, that if that number was 10, right? If you had 10 concussions and once you get past that point, you're more likely to get CTE. Let's be honest. I'm not getting paid in college. I'm getting paid in the NFL. So why would I waste, you know, those concussions not getting paid when I can use them up getting paid? Like, why not let me make that decision as opposed to having to stay, you know, for a certain amount of years before I can earn a living? That would be the argument, I guess.
I get your argument, but I mean, it goes back to one of the things that we always talk about. Sometimes you got to protect the athlete from themselves. And so I guess there's that balance that you have to strike. You have to weigh all of the different factors and then come to the conclusion that's in the best interest of everyone.
Today, 50 years since Willis Reed hobbled onto the court, hit the first two shots. I don't think he scored after that, but Clyde Frazier was just dominant. Knicks beat the Lakers in seven. Willis Reed will be a guest on the Barton Hahn show at 2 o'clock today. And the man who called the game, Marv Albert, on the K show at 5 o'clock today. But you would have to say, Rick, that without a doubt, that goes down as one of the great moments in the history of New York sports, right?
Without a question. 100%.
Now, what I've done, Chris, because I like to think I'm a hardworking individual, I've made a little list of other huge moments in the history of New York sports. You guys can tell me whether you think they're comparable with that moment.
Look at you channeling your inner Don LaGreca, making lists.
Well, I don't want to steal his baby, but okay. Here are some. I mean, so right off the bat, I mean, is there one outside of that stands up for you as like the greatest New York sports moment ever?
One for me? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, Super Bowl 46, 2011.
Well, no, but okay.
I mean, I don't understand what you're saying to me right now.
Well, but I'm like Willis Reed walking onto the court is a bigger New York sports moment than the Giants winning Super Bowl.
Okay, the Giants winning Super Bowl 42, the undefeated Patriots. That's huge moment.
Yeah,
the
Tyree catch is right there. How about this one? Messier's guarantee against the Devils. That's got to go down in lore as one of the great New York sports moments ever, right?
Yep, agreed.
What Joe Namath?
Namath's guarantee
69. That's got to be up there.
If you mention the butt fumble, I'm going to come through my microphone.
See, here's your negativity again. Why was I going to say anything? Why would I even think of the butt fumble?
No, you did. Yeah, man, that
you can't help but be negative about your team, Rick. You can't help it.
This is a you problem. You know what you should do, because you have free time now. You should do virtual therapy.
I'd be the whole day. I found Kate Cassie. So
no, you know what you should do, Rick? You should go into one of those rage rooms that's decorated in nothing but Jets memorabilia.
I mean, you have some real
and just destroy it. That's what you should do.
Let me explain one thing to you. So we're trying to use this time to be productive. Like I told you yesterday, somehow we tricked the kids into believing that vacuuming and dusting and mopping was cool, so they helped us out. So she's cleaning up, I'm cleaning up, we're going through some stuff. So she stumbles across one of these journals that she decided to buy me when my hockey career ended.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, no, it's not nice.
Feelings down on paper, yeah.
No, because I flipped through the first couple pages. And if I were to grab that journal now and read the first couple pages on the radio, you would realize, and I think I've come to realize, that there probably isn't enough therapy for me at this moment.
So you're
some of the
dead.
Thoughts. Dude, with some of the thought, I couldn't believe I wrote it. I was like, I really wrote, this is how I was feeling at this time? This is haunting to be reading this right now.
Well, that's not overly
positive. Sounds very dark, Rick.
Dude, it's way darker than I ever imagined.
Did you mention Adam Gase during any of this writing?
I didn't. I did not.
No.
If I pick up the journal today, I'll write a few notes down.
But this isn't, like, you have an issue going on here and you need help. Like, I'm talking about great positive moments in the history of New York sports, and you bring up the butt fumble. Why would you even do that?
I figured you'd throw it in there just to bring me to negative town.
I was being sincere.
You have Piazza's home run on that list?
I have Piazza's home run on that list. Of course I do.
It's a great moment. How about Wade Dubowitz's poke check?
That's further down the list. Yeah. Much, like you'd have to go to the scrolls to find.
How about Michael Jordan's last game in the Garden?
No.
Come on.
That doesn't count.
Why would you do that?
That doesn't count?
No.
It's a New York sports moment.
No.
Okay.
It's not, a positive New York sports moment. Not when a guy slashes you to say goodbye. Now, here's one I thought about, and I don't know where it ranks or if you have it. Aaron Boone's walk-off home run against Tim Wakefield and the Red Sox in 03. So it's a great moment. You remember it forever, but the next series they didn't win. So can that be on the same level as Willis Reed hobbling onto the court?
No. No. Because when the championship's on the line and the team actually wins it, in part because of that moment taking place, that makes it that much better.
So you have to go on to win a title, right?
I just think that it elevates it. It puts it on a whole nother level, Dave.
So that takes Robin Ventura's walk-off Grand Slam single. It just goes by the wayside because the Mets didn't win that series either.
Yeah, I would say so.
86 Mets.
The Dribbler.
The Dribbler. Got to go down as one of the greats.
Agreed.
Now, the Starks dunk can't be because the Knicks lost that playoff series, as we've seen week after week with the Last Dance Sunday nights.
But that was an iconic moment, though.
Big time.
It really was.
Did you hear him say, I think it was on the K Show, that he said he didn't know that was over Michael Jordan until the next day?
I could believe that. I could believe that. He probably had it in his mind, when I get this ball, I'm going to drive to the basket and dunk, and I don't care who's there. I could definitely see that happening.
So what do you think is number one, Rick? If you had to pin down, all right, I'm going to give you two. The top two New York sports moments ever. So here's what you got: 69 Mets, you got 69 Jets, the guarantee. You got Willis Reed hobbling onto the court. You can have the catch from Tyree, the Piazza home run, the Mets in 86. Messi.
I think you got to go with the Namath guarantee.
The Namath guarantee.
I think you got to go with the Namath guarantee.
That would be your number one New York sports moment.
Yeah, but it's New York sport. That's sports in general, though. I mean, that's what made, I mean, Joe Namath was great, but that's what made Joe Namath what Joe Namath became.
The amazing thing about it is he wasn't even very good in that game.
It doesn't matter. You don't remember that. You remember the fact that he said they were going to win and they won.
That's true.
I mean, Willis Reed wasn't good in this game.
He wasn't.
I mean, he inspired them, but it was Clyde that did all the heavy lifting.
I think the Mike Piazza home run has got to be up there.
It's got to be up there.
What the city was going through at that time. I mean, 10 days after 9/11.
He crushed that ball.
Crushing that home run. What was that, the eighth inning?
I think it was the eighth inning. I think it was off New York product Steve Carce.
Yeah. So I'd have to put that moment up there. If it's not one, it's up there. It's top two or three.
Now, here's a negative that was a positive for us here in New York, though.
Time out. That list has to include some Islanders, too. I mean, Bobby Nye has to be on that list.
Yeah. He's on here.
Yeah, he better be.
The 80 overtime goal.
Come on.
It's on here. It's a big list.
It's a big list.
It's the kind of work I do.
Thought pirate again, stealing Don's idea.
I'm not stealing anybody's idea. I just thought, what's the most iconic moments in the history of New York sports? Because today's the 50th anniversary.
It does sound a lot like what Donnie's been doing the last month.
This is it.
I don't blame you for trying, though, Dave.
So hang on a second.
This guy's Hack Sparrow.
Hang on a second with your dear, wonderful way that you address me. Well, I have a segment 10:30 on Saturday mornings called what?
Stump Rothenberg.
Okay. They all of a sudden have a segment that they've stolen from me. No?
Yes.
Okay. So Don has a good idea. I thought we could play off of it, and now I'm getting beat up on my own guys?
I'm not beating you up, Dave. Did I say that it was a negative? I said you were channeling your inner Don LaGreca.
Okay.
There's nothing
like
wrong
Don
with that.
I think Don's terrific.
Yeah.
If I can steal something that's going to make the hour show a little bit better, a little bit more flavor, I'm going to do it.
Hey, listen, Dave, we ain't got to reinvent the wheel on the radio. If you see something that's working for somebody else, we should at least try it. Doesn't that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Oh, okay.
You want to beat me up, Rick?
Rick is talking about how he's not going to be negative anymore, and all he's been is negative since he made that announcement.
Yeah.
Listen. I mean, it worked for Johnny Depp, all right? So it could work for you. You want to be Hack Sparrow? You want to be a thought pirate?
You
can be on Disney Plus.
Out of you. Every port is negativity.
You do you.
I'm not coming up with a top five list. I'm just saying, what are the top New York sports moments we've ever experienced?
I'll get you an eye patch, a parrot. Wooden leg if you want.
How about, is this I guess this has to be a great moment, right? The Norwood missed field goal?
Yeah, that has to be, that's up there, Dave.
I mean,
it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to hit it and the Bills were going to win.
I was so nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be one of them.
You know what's weird about that is at the time, you felt like that was such a long field goal, 47-yarder. If that was a 47-yarder now, you'd expect the guy to make it.
Dave, I actually expected him to make it.
Thank God he didn't.
That was a really good team. That Bills team was a really good team, though, Dave.
A great team.
Like, they had a lot of all-timers on that team.
You remember what they did to the Ravens the week before?
Reed, Thomas, Kelly.
Oh.
A lot of all-timers. Was Darryl Talley? Darryl Talley was there
Darryl
at the time.
Talley, Bruce Smith, yeah. One of the great players. A
lot of all-timers, man.
Defense.
Yeah. It's harder to go to the Super Bowl and lose four straight years than it is to actually win one.
And they don't get any credit.
I don't know. They don't get any credit because they didn't win, Dave.
No, I know.
It's unbelievable.
But it's almost
could you
like
imagine
you'd rather
what the,
go ahead.
Canty, could you imagine what the show would be like if that was like if we were doing the show now and Norwood was the Giants kicker and he missed that field goal, what the next show would have been for us?
Oh. Yeah.
It would have been.
Yeah,
oh
that wouldn't God. That wouldn't have been very good.
We wouldn't even see Dave. Dave would have been gone.
Yeah.
If he made the kick?
No, if that was your team. Same thing happened to you.
Oh, you'd see me. Why would you not see me?
If you rooted for the team.
If Norwood was the Giants kicker and he missed it?
Okay, so if my team lost a game because my kicker missed one like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened in 03. Right, when the Giants lost that game to the Niners in that playoff game.
Yeah, but not in the Super Bowl.
No, but I almost broke up with my soon-to-be wife. So, yeah. It would be very bad.
I did not know that, Dave. That is not a story you told on air.
I thought I had.
No, you didn't tell us that. Or maybe you did. I wasn't there that day.
We started dating in November. This is January. The game ends, and she calls me. She's like, I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do to make it up to you? I was like, make it up to me. I said, leave me alone. You can't make this kind of stuff up. I said, this is the kind of stuff that haunts you forever.
You can't fix this pain.
Yeah. I said. She said, well, how about you come over? I'll make dinner. We'll have a nice night. I'm like, dinner? Well, like, I mean, it was disgusting that she would even think about
I
eating at that
it!
Time.
Were repulsed by her wanting to do
so
something nice
off.
For you.
And wow. I was like, how dare you? I yelled at her. I scolded her. Like, she was a child. I admonished her. I was like, how dare you think that I could even think about dinner right now? We just blew a 38-14 lead. We lose the game 39-38. You want me to, oh, stop it. And she says, you know, I don't like the way you're treating me. I've told the story. I said, she said, I don't like the way you're treating me. I said, then go find someone who treats you better and go on a date right now.
Okay, now I remember. Yeah, you did say that. I remember. I didn't know it was connected to the Giants losing that playoff game.
Oh, God.
Okay. And the guy was a doctor, right?
A doctor, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you did tell that story. I didn't know it was connected to the playoff game.
Yeah, at big time doctor now, too. Big time.
Yeah, gyno. He was a gyno.
Dave, you are a special kind of crazy, man. I'm talking about Finkel is Einhorn type of crazy.
Yeah.
Like you're out there, man.
Oh, I'm living it.
I'm in Psychoville and roast in Rothenberg's the mayor.
Welcome.
Nicely done, Rico. Nicely done.
I can't help it. I mean, I'm broken. We know this.
Hey, here's what I'm going to offer you guys. And you guys, this is completely up to you guys since we got this fakakta list that Dave stole from the K show because he's a hack. I'm going to offer you something now just because it's Football Friday and I'm excited. Heading into the weekend, we're going to get some live sports in The Last Dance. I'm going to offer you the opportunity to break shortly and then get a full-on, like full-fledged football frenzy. I'm offering that.
You want to do a frenzy?
I am willing to forego an observations.
No, I don't think we would
legitimate.
Have.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why I said break now, that we can get a little bit of both. The full flavor.
So you
I'm
want
offering.
To do a scheduled Friday football frenzy?
Yes.
But I don't want you guys to start arguing about the Packers. I don't want to have to interject.
No, no.
And I know how you've been, Rick. You've been very negative lately.
We promise not to do that, Dave. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. It'll be a frenzy.
I mean, I'm talking about the greatest moments in New York sports history. You said you better not have the butt fumble on there.
I just felt like you were going to throw it in. It would have been the perfect timing for it. I said yesterday I was going to be optimistic. I go to negative town, and then that would have just thrown me over the edge.
No, I'm here
to
support
to come
you.
Back.
You're a friend in need. You've had a tough time with the Jets, and I'm here to support you. Keep you positive.
Yeah, I think we do football frenzy. Maybe you can steal another element from the K show. You want to tell a story from your crib or whatever you want to do. Just completely hack.
I don't look at that as stealing from the K show. Don has his daily Don. It's the top five. They have to guess them. Then they go over it. Then they yell at Don because they don't like something about it. I was just thinking of other great New York sports moments. It was not the daily Don or the daily Dave. There's no stealing. You're trying to pit me against Don.
Listen, if you called it the Daily Dave, I was going to disconnect my machine and be done.
We're going to be done for the day?
Done for the day.
You're trying to pit me and Don against each other.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to make you better. I'm trying to be more creative, like come up with something new.
Well, how else am I going to give you a list of great New York sports moments without it feeling like it's somehow taken from Don? So Don has the market cornered on any great moments?
He's the list guy. He's the list guy. You could have called Don. We could have brought Don onto the show, little cross promotion, and said, hey, Don, here's the idea I have. You jump on with us, and you give us your list of sports moments.
Maybe that is his list today.
And then we could attack him if we didn't like it, as opposed to me and Canty having to attack you.
Well, I don't think you're attacking me for the list. You're attacking me for just coming up with a list, thinking that it's stealing from Don.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Bates isn't on that list. I mean,
Sean
goal against Joseph. I mean, it's an iconic moment.
Sean
Cucka Bates. Listen, Cucka Bates, Curtis Joseph, come on. Ridiculous. The Coliseum was going to fall down.
Jeter Flip or Sean Bates, Canty? Where would you go with that one?
I'm going to go with the Jeter Flip, Dave.
Yes. Don't disrespect
Cucka Bates like that.
How about Lou Gehrig speaking in front of Yankee Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's got to be. This is what I do. I'm an idea guy.
Could be one of the worst nicknames that was fully accepted.
What, the Iron Horse?
Cucka Bates. His nickname was Cucka Bates.
I never even knew that was his nickname.
That's what we call him, Cucka Bates.
Yeah, that's not great.
Since he was a kid, because he had a bad eye, so they called him Cucka Bates. It's terrible. It's terrible.
And he was fine with this?
Yeah, he was fine with it.
Or you guys bullied him into this?
No, he was fine with it. He was 100% fine with it.
It's not a good name.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Not a good name. All right, so you want a frenzy. Is that what you're saying here?
what the Iron Horse?
I mentioned Lou Gehrig, and then you're like, that's got to be one of the worst nicknames in the history of sports.
No, that's a good nickname.
Well, I never thought of that as a bad nickname.
No. I was talking about Batesy.
You're too much.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.